Hi, Dave Emery here. This is Side 1, for the record, program number 792, titled Caution, Banksters at Work, subtitled More Collateralized Debt Obligations. This has been recorded on May 11th of the year 2014. This program is a direct follow-up to For the Record Program 772. That was titled Collateralized Debt Obligations. During the financial crisis, or really the run-up to the financial crisis, one of the hallucinatory credit instruments that had become very popular was something called the Collateralized Debt Obligation. That's D-E-B-T. And we have noted, as a number of different investigations into the wrongdoing of major financial institutions have proceeded, that there have been a number of very untimely deaths, including a large number of executives of various institutions who have jumped from the roofs or windows of high-rise corporate buildings or otherwise taken their own lives or died in very strange circumstances. One fellow was reported to have shot himself in the head and torso some 7 or 8 times with a nail gun. Some of the deaths were less suspicious than that, which is pretty ridiculous. That's a very bad case of suicide, supposedly shooting yourself in the head and torso 7 or 8 times with a nail gun. There's a guy named Richard Talley, by the way, who died in Colorado. We're going to be taking a look at not only some more investigations into major financial institutions, but we're going to begin with a very telling story from Bloomberg News that features very prominently warnings from observers that criminal investigations into major financial institutions should be limited or perhaps even interdicted, because if it is alleged here that because these institutions are so large, the classic case of too big to fail, then investigating them or charging them with criminal offenses could lead to a systemic financial collapse, because these institutions are so large that it is deemed to be bad business to investigate. And this is, I think, for most people, perhaps most people anyway, outside of Wall Street and the financial industry, this is a truly maddening proposition here. Basically, what they're saying is that these institutions should be allowed to proceed in a criminal manner, because if their ongoing criminality is interdicted by a legal investigation, then the resulting loss of confidence, the fallout from those investigations, could damage the entire economy. It is rather like having these institutions take the public as a whole, the economy as a whole, hostage, and threatening to shoot them if their wrongdoing is brought to heel. In the immediate background of this article, I think the term banksters, B-A-N-K-S-T-E-R-S, looms very large indeed. And although I generally like to avoid those kinds of stereotypical ideologized terms, I think it is only too appropriate in this case. What we're going to be looking at are dire warnings by people in the financial industry and observers of same that apparent criminal investigations of two very large institutions, Credit Suisse and the BNP Paribas, the P-A-R-I-B-A-S, a large French bank, should be handled with great caution because it is so dangerous to the economy as a whole, because these institutions are deemed to be too big to fail, and therefore they should not be investigated for criminal wrongdoing. And it is pretty obvious that a lot of these institutions, I don't know much about Credit Suisse or BNP Paribas, but there certainly has been no shortage of criminal activity on the part of major financial institutions, and we have all paid dearly for that. After reading this Bloomberg News article, we're going to take a look at a different kind of fallout from these investigations. We looked at a number of very suspicious deaths in the financial institutions within a very short time of one another in, for the record, 772. And those very suspicious deaths have proceeded apace. A lot of bankers have been jumping out of windows or jumping off roofs, an altogether different type of apparent fallout from criminal investigations. So we're going to be looking at that particular type of fallout later. However, we're going to begin with a story, again, from the Bloomberg News, Bloomberg.com, of May 1st of 2014. This is an article by Greg Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, Dakin Campbell, C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L, and Kerry, K-E-R-I, Geiger, G-E-I-G-E-R. It's titled, Criminal Charges Against Banks Risk Sparking Crisis, unquote, and it reads, as U.S. Justice Department prosecutors angle to bring the first criminal charges against global banks since the financial crisis of 2008, they'll have to stare down warnings of uncontainable collateral damage. The 2002 collapse of Arthur Andersen, the accounting firm indicted in the Enron scandal, quote, should be a lesson, unquote, for prosecutors, Brad Hintz, H-I-N-T-Z, an analyst at Sanford C. Bernstein & Company, said today in an interview on Bloomberg Television, don't play with matches, unquote. Stung by lawmakers' criticism that multi-billion-dollar settlements have done little to punish Wall Street in the wake of the financial crisis, prosecutors are considering indictments and probes of Credit Suisse Group AG and BNP Paribas S.A., a person familiar with the matter, said. Even after talking with financial regulators about ways to mitigate damage, such as ensuring that banks keep charters, prosecutors might not fully understand the consequences for the market, according to industry lawyers and bankers who are following the case. Bank clients, including trustees, fiduciaries, and pension funds, could be forced to cut ties with a financial institution labeled a criminal enterprise, the lawyers and bankers said, asking not to be named because they weren't authorized to talk publicly. Counterparties might also think twice before entering into billion-dollar transactions with such firms. Damaging a bank's business could lead to broader fallout across the financial industry, just as Lehman Brothers Holdings Incorporated's collapse in 2008 prompted investors to withdraw from other firms on concern its exit would set off a wave of losses. Parenthetically, notice the infuriating logic here that basically bank clients, including, quoting directly, bank clients, including trustees, fiduciaries, and pension funds, could be forced to cut ties with a financial institution labeled a criminal enterprise. Well, why in the world would anyone want to cut ties with a financial institution that is labeled a criminal enterprise? I can't imagine. I mean, obviously, I'm being facetious. This is worthy of Lewis and Carroll here. Skipping down, continuing with the story, criminal action would have to be handled so that any review of a bank's charter wouldn't spook customers or revoke a firm's license, said Gil Schwartz, a partner at Schwartz and Ballen, B-A-L-L-E-N, LLP, and a former Federal Reserve lawyer. The mere, quote, the mere threat of requiring a hearing could cause customers to lose confidence in the institution and could cause a run on the bank, unquote, Schwartz said. The warnings show the resistance prosecutors face in seeking to prove that global banks aren't too big and systemically important to indict. Preet Bharara, P-R-E-E-T, capital B-H-A-R-A-R-A, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, signaled in a March speech that a large financial firm would be charged soon, despite the industry's bleak predictions of fallout. Quote, Companies, especially financial institutions, will do almost anything to avoid the tough enforcement action and therefore have a natural and powerful incentive to make prosecutors believe that death or dire consequences await, unquote, he said, again quoting, I have heard assertions made with great force and passion that if we take any criminal action, the skies will darken, the oceans will rise, nuclear winter will be upon us, and the world as we know it will end, unquote. Credit Suisse has been the target since 2011 of a U.S. criminal probe into whether it helped Americans evade taxes. BNP Paribas has been investigated for possible violations of U.S. sanctions barring business with prohibited countries. Shares of Zurich-based Credit Suisse fell 0.3% yesterday to 27.91 francs after news reports on prosecutors' deliberations. BNP Paribas dropped 3.2% to 54.11 euros. The Paris-based firm said it may need to pay much more than the $1.1 billion it set aside for the U.S. sanctions case. There are a variety of ways for prosecutors to limit damage from criminal charges. One option would be to force a bank's subsidiary. Note this, one option would be to force a bank's subsidiary rather than the parent company to enter a guilty plea, said the lawyers and bankers. The Justice Department has gone down that path in settling charges involving the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, which forbids U.S. companies from bribing foreign officials to win business. Quote, I would expect regulatory discussions with these banks in question will avoid systemic consequences, unquote, said Darrell Dufy, a finance professor at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business in Stanford, California. Actually, that would suggest that was in Palo Alto, California. But you know, what do I know? Continuing, I expect the situation to be controlled, unquote. Many concerns expressed by financial professionals focused on less tangible fallout, such as lost confidence in a firm. Some compared such a situation to Bear Stearns companies, which was battered by doubts about its strength in 2008, leading to its emergency sale to J.P. Morgan Chase and Company. Client psychology could also come into play. For example, even if investment managers aren't prohibited from working with a bank, they may shy away because they don't want to explain why they put funds in a firm with a criminal past. I mean, can you imagine having to hold an investment manager accountable by having him explain why he put funds in a firm with a criminal past? I mean, again, it's tough to avoid reaching into the foulest backwaters of my vocabulary, which I can't do on the air when reading some of this, but I'm presenting this again to understand the circulatory logic that applies, because these institutions have grown so large that even if they are engaged in criminal wrongdoing, many of their advocates maintain that, well, nothing should be done because it will collapse the economy, then therefore allowing them to continue to engage in criminal behavior. The last paragraph of this article is very interesting. Mindful that the specter of criminal charges helped put financial institutions such as Bank of Credit and Commerce International and Drexel Burnham Lambert Incorporated out of business, prosecutors in Washington and New York have met with representatives of the Fed and the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency to discuss the regulatory risks of indictments, according to two people briefed on the matter. Well, the BCCI is something we have dealt with at great length in the past. It was dubbed by WAGS, the Bank of Crooks and Criminals International. It was basically a front for money laundering for all sorts of evil doing, including terrorism, drug dealing, weapons trafficking, and combinations thereof. It figured very prominently in the Iran-Contra affair and also had very strong connections with the milieu of Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, and the Muslim Brotherhood. It also, by the way, was very much involved with the milieu of George W. Bush, which is actually redundant in light of what I had to say about bin Laden and Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood. So it is very interesting to note here that the argument that is being presented is that basically these institutions are so large and so central to the economy that therefore they can't be allowed to fail, even if they have been engaged in wholesale criminal activity, because they are so big. And the wording is something I find interesting because of the fallout that would occur because of these investigations. For much of the rest of this program, we are going to be looking at a different kind of fallout, so to speak, that appears to be stemming from some of these investigations. This, however, does not concern the flight of capital because of a lack of confidence on the part of these institutions' customers. This, rather, is a different kind of fallout. Executives of some of these institutions have been falling off of roofs or falling out of windows from high-rise office buildings or falling off of bicycles after being rear-ended by SUVs, or just dying of natural causes, falling off of cliffs, dying at the ripe old age of 37 of ostensibly natural causes. Obviously, again, I'm being facetious, I'm using sarcasm. There has the epic wave of mortality, what I have dubbed collateralized death obligation, spelled D-E-A-T-H, not D-E-B-T. They have continued apace. We're going to begin with an article from the Zero Hedge blog spot of April 24th of 2014. This is a post by Tyler, T-Y-L-E-R, Durden, D-U-R-D-E-N. It's titled, 52-year-old French banker jumps to her death in Paris after questioning her superiors. It reads in part, there have been 13 senior financial services executive deaths around the world this year, but the most notable thing about the sad suicide of the 14th, a 52-year-old banker at France's Bred Banque Populaire, is she is the first female. That institution, by the way, capital B-R-E-D hyphen, capital B-A-N-Q-U-E hyphen, T-O-P-U-L-A-I-R-E. Continuing, as Le Parisien reports, Lydia, no surname given, jumped from the bank Paris's headquarters' 14th floor shortly after 10 a.m. France TV added that sources said, quote, she questioned her superiors before jumping out the window, unquote. No last name was given. Obviously, I don't know any more than anyone else about what might have been behind this. I do not understand if there's any relationship between the Bred Banque Populaire and BNP Paribas, which is being investigated. However, again, when a 52-year-old banker questions her superiors and then jumps out a 14th floor window, again, some of the fallout, so to speak, from shady dealings by the institution, that does raise some very interesting questions. And the bank tried to dodge any responsibility by pointing out that she had been in psychotherapy for quite some time. And I would note there are a lot of people who have been in psychotherapy who don't wind up jumping out of 14th floor windows after questioning their superiors. In this post, Tyler Durden notes many of the deaths that we had spoken about in, for the record, 772, William Brokesmith, Mr. Richard Talley, and some of the others, and also notes a number of other deaths as well. Now, this is on top of the people that we spoke about. I recorded, for the record, 772 on February 9th of 2014. And in addition, Tyler Durden notes the following. Carl Slim, capital S-L-Y-M, 51-year-old Tata Motors managing director Carl Slim, was found dead on the fourth floor of the Shangri-La Hotel in Bangkok, Thailand, on January 27th. Tim Dickinson, a UK-based communications director at Swiss Re AG, also died last month. However, the circumstances surrounding his death are still unknown. We took a look at the suicide of Pierre Vautier in, for the record, 772 at Swiss Re, shortly after Josef Ackermann, the former chairman of Deutsche Bank, became head of Swiss Re. Again, no cause of death. It just simply said that simply said that the circumstances surrounding Tim Dickinson's death are unknown. Continuing, Ryan Henry Crane, C-R-A-N-E, a 37-year-old executive at J.P. Morgan, died in an alleged suicide just a few weeks ago. No details have been released about his death aside from this small obituary announcement at the Stanford Daily Voice. We're going to read a little bit about that death. Lee Junjie, J-U-N-J-I-E, 33-year-old banker in Hong Kong, jumped from the J.P. Morgan headquarters in Hong Kong this week. Lee, by the way, was a Forex trader at J.P. Morgan. The foreign exchange operations of various banks are one of the things that have been under investigation for criminal activity, and we noted that in, for the record, 772. More examples of fallout. Quote, fallout, unquote. James Stewart Jr., former National Bank of Commerce CEO, found dead in Scottsdale, Arizona, the morning of February 19th. A family spokesman did not say what caused the death. Edmund Eddie Riley, 47, a trader at Midtown's Vertigo Group, committed suicide by jumping in front of a Long Island Railroad train. Kenneth Belando, B-E-L-L-A-N-D-O, 28, a trader at Levi Capital, formerly investment banking analyst at J.P. Morgan, jumped to his death from his sixth-floor east side apartment. Jan Peter Schmidtman, S-C-H-M-I-T-T-M-A-N-N, 57, the former CEO of Dutch Bank ABN AMRO, found dead at home near Amsterdam with wife and daughter. Lee Janois, 49, the director of China's Bank Regulatory Commission, died of a sudden heart attack. And then the aforementioned unfortunate Lydia, 52. By the way, there was one other death that we noted in, for the record, 785. Bitcoinberg, Part 4, Fool's Gold, Part 2. We noted that a CEO of a online currency exchange that was specializing in Bitcoin, a woman named Autumn Radke, also appears to have taken her life at the ripe old age of 28. One of the things that we noted in, for the record, 772, is the high degree of mortality surrounding people at J.P. Morgan and or Morgan Stanley. And that certainly appears to be accelerating. One of the deaths, one of the examples of fallout, unquote, that we looked at in the Tyler Durden, that we touched on, I should say, in the Tyler Durden article, was that of Ryan Crane. And more about that from the Bloomberg News of February 13th, 2014. Again, February 9th of 2014 was when we recorded, for the record, 772. And the hits just keep on coming, so to speak. Again, Bloomberg, 2/13/2014, an article by Hugh, H-U-G-H, Son, S-O-N. Ryan Crane, J.P. Morgan Equities Trading Executive, dies at 37, reads in part, Ryan Crane, a J.P. Morgan Chase & Company employee who in a 14-year career at the New York-based bank rose to executive director of a unit that trades blocks of stocks for clients, has died. He was 37. He died on February 3rd at his Stamford, Connecticut home, according to the website of Leo P. Gallagher and Son's funeral home in Greenwich, Connecticut. The cause of death will be determined when a toxicology report is completed in about 6 weeks, said the spokeswoman for the state's chief medical examiner. Again, the ripe old age of 37, 1999 graduate of Harvard University. And another interesting death, and we're going to talk about some of the background for this. And this happened apparently the day before, certainly appeared in the news, from Bloomberg News of February 12th of 2014. Article by Lawrence Arnold, A-R-N-O-L-D. John Ruiz, R-U-I-Z as in zebra, Morgan Stanley municipal debt analyst, dies at 53. John Ruiz, a municipal debt analyst who recently delivered a presentation on Puerto Rico for Morgan Stanley, one of the biggest underwriters of the island's debt, has died. He was 53. He died suddenly on February 4th at his home in Edgewater, New Jersey, according to his brother James Ruiz. He had returned the day before from a business trip to Florida. an executive director at New York-based Morgan Stanley since 2010, Ruiz developed expertise in the public finances of the areas he covered, which earlier in his career included California and Florida. For Morgan Stanley, Ruiz wrote a presentation on Puerto Rico at the firm's Global Distressed Debt Conference last October in New York City. The Commonwealth's economy entered recession in 2006 and is currently struggling to gain traction given its heavy dependence on the manufacturing and government sectors, which have been contracting for several years and face significant challenges moving forward, according to the presentation by Ruiz and Ryan Brady, a vice president. Morgan Stanley, in conjunction with Barclays PLC and RBC, that's Roger Bloomberg Capital Capital Markets, is working with Puerto Rico on what may be a record sale of junk-rated municipal bonds to refinance debt and raise cash, Bloomberg News reported this week. Morgan Stanley was the biggest underwriter of the U.S. Commonwealth's debt last year as of November. And note this last sentence because this is going to be a bridge to what we're going to look at next. On credits like Jefferson County, Alabama, and Puerto Rico, he dug deep and got to all of the important credit aspects of our issuer base very quickly, unquote. J.R. McDermott, capital M.C., capital D.E.R.M.O.T.T., a Morgan Stanley managing director, said about John Ruiz, according to the bond buyer. Now, note this particular phraseology. It says, on credits like Jefferson County, Alabama, and Puerto Rico, he dug deep and got to all of the important credit aspects of our issuer base very quickly. We're going to take a look at what has been happening in Jefferson County, Alabama. And again, be glad you don't live in Jefferson County, Alabama, because things have been rather awry in Jefferson County, Alabama. That is not so sweet home, Alabama. And among the institutions that were apparently involved with some of the questionable, shall we say, dealings in Jefferson County, Alabama, was J.P. Morgan Chase. Not Morgan Stanley, but J.P. Morgan Chase. And again, one wonders here about John Ruiz if, in fact, he dug deep and got to all of the important credit aspects of Jefferson County's situation. One wonders whether perhaps he disturbed some rather vicious dogs and whether he was bitten as a result. However, we're going to be taking a look at that in side two of this program. All of my entire life's work is available for download for free at the website www.spitfirelist.com. That's S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T, one word, .com. It has all of my recorded material, long article-length written descriptions of the various programs, a tremendous amount of supplemental written material, including articles by yours truly, a number of articles by a contributing editor named Tara Fractal, and the comments themselves on these programs and posts are a major resource in and of themselves. There's also a small library of very important anti-fascist books available for download for free. Again, spitfirelist.com. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 792, Caution, Banksters at Work, subtitled More Collateralized Death Obligations. This has been recorded on May 11th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.